Welcome back to another episode of the Team Called Palace podcast. Happy Easter to you. We are chatting off the back of Palace's 1-1 draw at the City Ground against Nottingham Forest. Now, we took the lead in the game. Inevitably, we surrendered said lead and didn't get all 3 points. But how do you feel after this one?
I must admit, if you'd offered me a point before the game, I probably would have taken it. And I know that sounds quite negative, but just purely from a league position point of view, I think when you look at it, we're still 8 points clear of Forest. We're now 8 points clear of Luton as well. They've got 8 games left. We've got 9 games left. So I think it was really important not to lose. Obviously, we would love to have won, especially given the fact that we went ahead. But in all honesty, I think it's a better point for Palace than it is for Forest.
Yeah, that's a valid point. And let's start with that goal. JP Mateta getting us up and running nice and early in the game. And it was quite a lovely goal with a number of key contributors.
Yeah, it was. And for me, this is what Oliver Glasner wants to see from his team. He wants to see them playing forward, playing passes that break the lines. Jefferson Lerma does that. It's a fantastic ball into Abiré Eze. Eze's made a really good run. His first touch is excellent. His second touch is nowhere near as good, but thankfully his third one was fantastic because he laid it off to Mateta, who coolly slammed it into the roof of the net. A fantastic finish from JP. That's now 4 goals and 1 assist in his last 7 games. He is in the best form of his Palace career. And yeah, just a really fantastic goal, a really good start to the game.
And you mentioned it being almost a product of the Oliver Glasner style, and I had to watch it back a couple of times to realise that it's Joel Ward. Yes, Joel Ward in the centre of the pitch, stepping in front of his man to intercept in the Nottingham Forest half, knocks it to Lerma before that brilliant pass, as you mentioned. And just to elaborate on JP Mateta, because if you're talking about the influence of a manager, you often want to ask the question, is he improving players? Are we seeing individuals get better under their instruction and their coaching? And Mateta, not only have we been praising him in recent times for his overall contributions, but we're seeing some end product from him, as you just illustrated too.
Yeah, and I do think that the way we are playing now, being a little bit more direct, I do think that plays into his hands. And I think also, we mentioned it earlier in the season, some of that work that he did with Roy, with Ray on the training ground, you can see that he's just so much better at playing with his back to goal, bringing others into play. And ultimately, that's going to help him in this new system because he's going to have the likes of Eze and IU getting a little bit closer to him, guys that he can bring into play. So yeah, really pleased with him. Obviously, it's great to see him scoring goals, but I think in his kind of all-round game, he's come on leaps and bounds this season.
And arguably, we could have been a couple of goals up at the break, and you talked about passing between the lines and that pre-assist from Lerma for Eze to knock it to JP. Well, what about the pass from Adam Wharton to play Eze in for the big chance, really, for us to go 2-0 up? Obviously, Sells denies him. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it was an absolutely sumptuous pass from Adam Wharton. This is the sort of thing that we know he's capable of. All I would say, and this is no slight on Adam Wharton, I think in a way it was almost too straight for Eze. He almost needed the pass to be either to the left of Sells or to the right of Sells to help him finish it because it was very straight and unfortunately Eze just couldn't quite get the angle on the shot to get it round the Forest keeper. But yeah, a wonderful ball through from Sells. Unfortunately for us, Abiré didn't have his shooting boots on because he had a few chances in the game. And if he did have his shooting boots on, I think we actually might have won it quite comfortably.
Yeah, like you say, watching it back, you think, oh, Eze's got to score that. But actually, he does get himself in a body position to try and knock it round Sells. I guess you have to give the goalkeeper credit for how quickly he gets off his line, which perhaps with that in mind, we'll talk about the equaliser because Dean Henderson in the side, deputising for Sam Johnson, who, of course, has had this elbow surgery, which is going to pretty much rule him out for the season and for the summer, which is obviously gutting news for us and for him on a personal level as well. But Dean Henderson coming in for a little bit of criticism for the goal. How much blame do you think you can attribute to him? And Well, there's a few others who really haven't done their jobs either, I guess.
You see, this is a tricky one because I thought it was quite a strange goal. I've watched it back a few times, and I think where the cross from Gibbs-White is so straight, it makes it kind of more peculiar, something you don't see as often. I think, first of all, I wanted to say that on the whole, I thought Dean Henderson had a good game. He made some good saves. I thought he did fairly well from set pieces as well, because it was pretty clear that Forest were targeting him. I think secondly, also, you need to mention Chris Wood's header, because it was a fantastic header. It was kind of prime Glenn Murray, wasn't it? Just that awareness, kind of knowing where the goal is, the way he got the arc on it, and it kind of looped over Henderson and went in. So yeah, a fantastic header from Wood. I think for me, my biggest issue with Henderson and this goal is his starting position. When Morgan Gibbs-White has that ball, he is a couple of footsteps off his line. He is so, so deep. So when Gibbs-White plays that ball, when Wood makes contact, he's probably, what, 4 yards out? And Henderson's come forward a little bit, but where he started so deep, he's got no chance of getting there first. So, yeah, for me, Henderson's starting position is the biggest issue. I don't really kind of blame him for it, though, because as I said, I think it's a fantastic header. I also think you need to look at the fact that Gibbs-White had that time and space to get his head up and pick that pass. And then also the fact that Chris Wood has run off the back of the defenders. He's got far too much time and space when he ends up making contact with that ball.
Yeah, I think it's a really good observation, the fact that Henderson, for me, was never really going to get there. And like you say, I think that's because of his starting position, and he ends up in a bit of a no man's land and almost trying to claw the ball from behind the line as he reaches, but ultimately in vain, to try and stop it from going in. And yeah, Gibbs-White has a bit too much time, doesn't he, to play that pass. It's a very clever ball. We know the sort of ability that he has in those kind of positions. But yeah, I think when you're playing three centre-halves and they've got one big centre-forward, you can't be letting him go. Chris Richards, I think he's the closest to him. Anderson, he runs off the back of him. You know, ideally, I don't know, they are a step deeper and they deal with it as well. I don't know. It's, as you say, a peculiar goal, but a clever one from Forrest's point of view. And yeah, I guess just a frustrating one to concede, though.
Yeah, it is, because obviously when you go 1-0 up away from home at somewhere like the City Ground, you want to get that second goal. Unfortunately, we couldn't do that. I think we all knew that after the first half, Forest were going to improve. They weren't very good in the first half. Obviously, they made the change at half time to bring on Anthony Elanga. For me, they did get better at the start of that second half. So yeah, we kind of expected the pressure to come. Obviously, disappointing to concede, but for me, we had to take our chances. We had to go 2-0 up.
And we almost went 2-1 up, of course. We almost scored from a corner. Eze got the assist for the goal when he almost had another one, delivering it right-footed. I think it was Munoz at the near post. I wasn't sure if it took a deflection off a Forest player, actually, before it hits the far post and bounces away. Would have been quite the week for the Colombian if he'd have managed to score it, having netted the winner for his country and been an injury doubt going into this one. But I guess just not meant to be for us to end that run of not scoring from a corner.
Not yet, no, but I said it a few weeks ago, we are definitely getting closer. We had the Eze chance as well before that in the second half, a really well-worked corner where they've worked it to Eze. He's put it wide, flashed it past the post. Again, I would like to see him working the keeper. And then, as you said, Daniel Munoz hitting the woodwork. We are getting closer. It is coming. I can see the fact that Oliver Glasner and his staff are working on this. We do look much more threatening, but yeah, unfortunately not to be.
And you said at the top of the pod that going into it, you would have taken a point. Oliver Glasner, after the game, saying it was 2 points lost rather than one gained. I guess it's kind of a net zero in the sense that us and Forest are still the same number of points apart. We've gained one on Luton after their defeat to Spurs. So yeah, as much as it's disappointing not to win at the City Ground, and I don't think our recent record there against Nottingham Forest is particularly good anyway. So yeah, to get a point out of it, albeit to drop points from a losing position again. But hey, I think we're used to that by now, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think that's the frustration for Oliver Glasner. Ultimately, he's been in charge of 4 games and we've led in all 4 of them. We've only actually won one of them. So, you know, this is a bit of an issue. As we said, he inherited this issue regarding the fitness of the players, their kind of mental ability to see games out as well. This is something that isn't going to change overnight. But I think also he will look at that game. He will look at the chances that we created, the fact that a lot of the good chances fell to Eze. I think on another day, if he gets those sorts of chances, you'd expect him to take at least one of them. I mean, in the game, he had the highest XG of any individual player. I think it was something like 0.66. I think the XG nerds are being quite kind to Ebs on this occasion, because I would expect him to score at least one of those chances. So obviously frustrating from that point of view. I think with Forest, it was an interesting one because we sort of feared the impact that the points deduction would have on them. We thought that the crowd would really be up for it, and they were. But ultimately, in that first half, we were the better side. We went 1-0 up. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the second. We knew Forest were going to come back into it. I think, once again, you look at the two benches, their bench is much stronger than ours. And yes, I know they spent a lot of money that maybe they shouldn't have spent, and that's why they're in the predicament that they're in. But yeah, when you look at the depth and the substitutes, the options available, we brought on Jeffrey Schlupp, Will Hughes and Nathaniel Klein. No disrespect to those guys, but they're not going to really change the game from an offensive point of view. So obviously tricky for Oliver Glasner. He's still missing a number of key players, but yeah, he would love to have picked up his first away win as Crystal Palace manager.
Well, Oliver Glasner has that opportunity to try and get a first away win as Palace boss nice and quickly because of the midweek game week that is coming up very swiftly upon us. So a trip to Bournemouth and the South Coast on Tuesday night. They're coming into it off the back of a victory against Everton. And well, it feels like they're a very different team to the one that arrived at Selhurst Park on that very disappointing evening earlier on in the season.
Yeah, Bournemouth are enjoying a really good run of form. They've won three of their last four games. As you mentioned, they beat Everton on Saturday. More goals for Dom Solanke. He's still in my fantasy team. That's one of the few things that I've got right this season, leaving Dom Solanke in my team. But they're a very dangerous side. I know some people will point to the fact that their fixtures have been quite favourable recently, but ultimately, they're in a good run of form. They were much better than us at Selhurst Park earlier in the season. That really was one of the darker days towards the end of Roy Hodgson's reign. I'm really hoping that we'll put in a much better performance this time around. But yeah, listen, they're having a really good season. Obviously, they started the campaign slowly. Then they picked up. They seem to be winning every week. They then had another little dip and then they picked up again recently. So yeah, I think to be honest with you, when you look at the times we've played Bournemouth this season, you could argue that we've played them at a couple of quite bad times because they do seem to be in a rich vein of form. And I think also when you look at the league table, they're 8 points ahead of us. It's only one position, but yeah, 8 points is quite a lot, to be honest with you, when you're looking at teams who are 13th and 14th. So listen, I think they've had a really promising first season under Andoni Iraola. Yes, I know they've spent quite a bit of money. They brought in quite a few exciting young attacking players, but fair play to him. They're already safe. I think they were safe before the international break, to be honest with you. So you'd have to say a really good start to his tenure as Bournemouth manager.
Yeah, absolutely. The improvement under Iraola this season has been clear for everyone to see. And like you say, very attacking system that they like to play with those attacking midfielders and wingers getting up in support of Dom Solanke, who has been an absolute revelation this season, hasn't he? I think, what was it, his 16th Premier League goal of the season on Saturday? Whoever had him down as a 15-goal-a-season man in the top flight when he was, say, at Liverpool previously, or obviously when he was a youngster at Chelsea, he was being bigged up as a future England striker, but feels like he's maybe starting to really deliver on his potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I mentioned it last season about the fact that I think actually for Dom Solanke, dropping down to the Championship, scoring lots of goals, that was really good for him and for his development, because obviously we know he was prolific at youth level, but then to translate that to the Premier League straight away, that's quite tricky. It doesn't matter if you're playing for Chelsea or Liverpool, that's not easy. So I think for him to have that time in the Championship, score lots of goals, really kind of learn a bit more about himself and about his game. And then obviously he's come back to Premier League. And yeah, since Bournemouth came up, we've definitely seen the best of Dom Solanke. And he is a massive threat. He is someone who we are going to have to be incredibly wary of. But also, when I say that, he's got guys backing him up now as well. The likes of Marcus Tavernier, Justin Kluivert, Antoine Semenyo, who of course was heavily linked with Palace in the past. He's having an excellent season. So yeah, listen, they've got a number of threats and it is going to be a really tricky game.
Yeah, just in terms of personnel, you talked about some of their attacking players. Their big miss is Senesi, who's obviously injured at the back. Mepham's been deputising for him. Lloyd Kelly's back fit again now. Tyler Adams is back fit again. They signed him when he was injured, didn't they? And he hasn't featured all season up until now. So they've got a couple of players back and, you know, a pretty good squad, really. Like the likes of Utara as well have had a decent impact coming off the bench. I would very much expect them to have, you know, more quality to come on via substitutions than perhaps we will. You mentioned the lack of depth that we've got at the moment and obviously had to field some quite young forward players on the bench at the City Ground. How then can we go about trying to get a result in this one? Is there an argument that perhaps they don't keep enough clean sheets? Neto in goal can be a good shot stopper, but has got a mistake in him. Adam Smith's played 200 games, I think, now for Bournemouth in the Premier League. He's a bit of an old stager. Can we get at them in terms of our attack and their defence, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, that's the best way for us to go about this. I mean, listen, any team that concedes 3 goals in the first half at home to Luton can't be fantastic defensively. So yeah, it is an area of weakness for them. You mentioned someone like Adam Smith. We know what we're going to get from Adam Smith. We've played against him so many times before. He's quite dirty. He's quite mouthy. That's just the way he is. But fair play to him. He's managed to forge himself a really good career. So yeah, I think that is the best way for us to go about it. Obviously, we spoke about the threat of Dom Solanke, but Jean-Philippe Mateta's in fantastic form. We need to try and give him the service. Hopefully, Ebbs will have his shooting boots on as well. I don't want to kind of labour the point, and I don't want to sound like I'm obsessed with substitute benches, but when you look at their bench against Everton, they brought on Lloyd Kelly, Philip Billing and Dango Ouattara, but the players they didn't bring on, they had Unal, Favre and Alex Scott as well as unused subs. These are the kind of luxuries that Oliver Glasner simply doesn't have. So once again, you know, talking about teams like Forest, like Bournemouth, they haven't been in the Premier League for that long, but they've already built much deeper squads than us. And yes, I know we're missing players through injury, but Bournemouth are missing a few players as well. You mentioned Marcos Senesi. They're also missing Luis Sinisterra as well. So yeah, I think this is a bit of an issue. And as I said, I don't want to labour the point, but when you look at the options that Oliver Glasner has, you mentioned the bench at the City Ground. Obviously, it's fantastic to see the likes of Rashaw Mathurin on the bench, but I'm sure Oliver Glasner would like to have a bit more kind of proven Premier League quality that he can turn to impact the game.
Yeah, I don't think Ryan Christie played for them on Saturday either, so that's another one they were missing. I guess from our point of view, it's probably going to be the same starting 11, isn't it? We don't really have too much choice in terms of changing it. And yeah, it's obviously a quick turnaround, not ideal that, you know, we don't have maybe a couple of guys that you'd hope to come in and freshen things up.
Yeah, and obviously it's fantastic that Michael Olise is back on the grass and taking part in some of the training sessions, but Oliver Glasner has already said that he's not going to be available for this one. This is the sort of game that you would love to have him in because he can make a real impact, especially against a team like Bournemouth. But yeah, I think even having someone like Odson Edouard available to impact the game off the bench, that would really help. I don't think he's going to be available for this one either. So yeah, it is really tricky for Oliver Glasner because when you're looking at making those changes in the final third, he just doesn't really have the options. So he is kind of operating with his hands tied behind his back. But that being said, I have seen enough in his reign so far to suggest that we can go down to Bournemouth and we can get something. Just thinking about the game before this break and after the break, against Luton, we were by far and away the better side. We created lots of chances. We didn't take them. We didn't win the game. And then against Forest, I think in the first half in particular, we were the better side. We created lots of chances. We didn't take them. We didn't win the game. You would like to think at some point we are going to take a few more of these chances that we are creating.
And Bournemouth would be pretty timely to do so, because in terms of fixtures, we've got some tough games coming up after this.
Yeah, we do. Obviously, after Bournemouth, it's Man City at home on Saturday. And then the week after, on Sunday, we go to Anfield to take on Liverpool. So, yeah, two really tough games on the horizon. It would be fantastic to win this one, get ourselves up to 33 points, try and extend that gap between us and the bottom three before we take on those two title-chasing sides.
And you already mentioned this about the league positions, the fact that we're both next to one another in the table, 13th and 14th, and yet with an 8-point gap, we're not going to come 12th this season, that's for sure at least.
No, I mean, just looking at the league table, you'd have to say that 14th is probably the best it's going to be. And listen, I always kind of think of us being somewhere around that 12th to 14th bracket. But yeah, unfortunately, we won't be in our customary 12th place this season.
I think most Palace fans will take 14th, let's be honest, when it comes to the final league table in the Premier League this season. As long as we're steering clear of trouble, that's obviously the aim, and for Glasner to build ahead of next season. Right then, a little prediction for this game. Can we go there and nick a result, perhaps?
Yeah, we can. I mean, obviously, we won there last season. I remember that one in particular because that was the day that your son was born. And I believe Ebere Eze got on the score sheet as well. So I'm going to back him to find his shooting boots again. I think it'll be a 2-1 win for Palace. Dom Solanke to score to help my fantasy team. A goal for Eze. And also, I would like to see Adam Wharton play the full 90 minutes and get on the score sheet.
Yeah, that was the last time we scored from a corner, of course. And my son is 15 months old now. So yeah, from a corner would be nice if we could repeat that trick down at Bournemouth. But yeah, absolutely. Like you say, might even take a point personally, but we could do with all three with, as we say, those fixtures coming up. We'll be back podding after the game against Manchester City, as well as this one against Bournemouth, to look back on both of those. In the meantime, keep in touch with all of our thoughts on Twitter, X, TC Palace Pod, or on Facebook, Team Called Palace. You can get this podcast on iTunes and Spotify. And if you want to subscribe to the Team Called Palace newsletter, the next issue is coming up fairly soon, I believe, Matt. It's teamcalledpalacepod@gmail.com if you want to sign yourself up for that. Have a good week, Palace fans, and you'll hear from us again very soon.